Yes, I.
Yo. Son de la selva, mi batalla. Batalla. Son de la selva.
This is Dr. Allie Evans welcoming you to Light on Health, a show where we shine the light on a full spectrum of topics that affect your health and that of our entire community. My guest today is Dr. Jennifer Lysette, and we're going to be talking about cancer care and kind of the evolution of it, what's changed, what's stayed the same, and where the future is looking, especially here in Astoria. So welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And tell us... I always am fascinated by this, but how did you kind of land on cancer care as a specialty and oncology as a specialty?
Well, it probably goes back to my internship and residency. So I did an internal medicine internship and residency, and during that time, we had different rotations in the hospital, and I did my training in Boston at Beth Israel Deaconess, and I had the opportunity to rotate on the oncology units there as well as the Dana-Farber Cancer Center. And it was actually during a very exciting time for cancer care because it was when the drug Gleevec or imatinib was being developed and was really one of the first examples of targeted therapy.
That's
and
right.
Really shed light on a cancer that was able to be identified to get down to the mutation in the cell that a drug could be developed. And so it was a cancer that went from being almost incurable without a very aggressive step called bone marrow transplant to going into remissions with a simple pill.
And isn't that so incredible?
It was yeah. Extremely incredible. And I was an intern during that time, and I can still remember a day during rounds when we were all talking about Gleevec. And so that was a very powerful experience for me. And I was also drawn very much to the patient care and the continuity of care that you can have as an oncologist. And
yeah, you really become part of that family, not just the patient. It's almost their whole family is family. You become part of that.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
And you're kind of with them through, you can be with them really from that diagnosis point to, you know, ideally remission and monitoring thereafter.
Very true.
Yeah.
We tend to follow patients for a long time.
Yes, yeah. Which is really, yeah. Especially I think in our community, you know, you working at Columbia Memorial.
Yes.
We have such a small and intimate community, and it's really nice to get to know people and what their stories are.
Very true.
Yeah.
I agree.
And did you grow up, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Anchorage, Alaska.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Okay. Well, now you get to have the little moments of sunshine we offer here.
Yes.
So for the listeners, I know cancer is just this word we hear all the time, but let's dumb it down is the wrong word, but let's keep it really simple for a minute. And let's just talk about, I think when we use the word cancer, we get this image in our head of this like octopus looking thing with tentacles, and it's this tumor. And of course, some cancers can present as that, and it is this kind of giant tumor. But can you just give us the simple, like, what is cancer?
So at the very basics, cancer refers to any cell that escapes the normal growth and regulation pathways. So it can be a cell in any organ in the body. It can be in the blood. So we sometimes refer to what we call liquid tumors that are more in the blood, like leukemias, versus solid tumors, which would be like a breast cancer or lung cancer. But at the very beginning, it starts, we think, in the DNA or the blueprints of the cell, where something goes awry and that cell can escape the normal checkpoints and then start to multiply and turn into what we call a clone. And then once there are millions of those cells, that can become a visible tumor.
Right. And when you say the normal checkpoints, it's really the immune system being able to keep that cell at bay? Or is it more organs than that, or more parts of the body than that?
So we think more and more the immune system has a powerful role, and that is exhibited by some of our newer therapies, just even in the past 1 to 2 years with immunotherapies with solid tumors. But in addition to the immune system, there are proteins inside the cell that affect the DNA checkpoints and the regulations so that a cell shouldn't be able to divide over and over in right. our adult mature tissues. And some of those proteins, like what are called tyrosine kinase proteins, are very involved in that. And some of our therapies, like the Gleevec, are what are called tyrosine kinase inhibitors.
And so the cancer cell is really a cell that stops following the rules, so to speak. I mean, it stops following the parameters and the rules.
Very good way to put it, yes.
Right. It's like a salmon swimming upstream. And do you – I've heard this before, and I'm curious of your input. Do you think we all have cancer cells in our body all the time, and our body is able to keep it at bay, and the immune system is able to keep it at bay? Or do you think it's really something that most people don't have those cells?
So that's a very good question, and I have heard that as well. I don't know off the top of my head that I can cite
neither.
Your data.
Right.
But I think the theory is that we have cells that may start to break those rules, and the checkpoints of our body, including the immune system, over and over take care of those cells before they can become cancerous.
Right.
But cancer happens when a cell manages to escape all of those kind of fail safes that we should have in our body.
Right.
And many people talk about the multi-step hypothesis, mm-hmm. which has to do with that if we have just a single mutation, maybe our body takes mm-hmm. care of that. But if there's multiple mutations that happen very quickly, one after the other, that it might just overwhelm our checkpoints, and that's how the cell might escape and start to become cancerous.
Right. And it makes sense because a cell, if it's mutated mm-hmm. enough, doesn't look like a normal cell. It's kind of wearing a disguise. And so it would make sense that it would evade the immune system or evade.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. And that also just gives me the opportunity to explain that some of the newer drugs called immune checkpoint inhibitors actually are working to overcome that issue, because they are helping the immune system to be able to recognize again the tumor cells mm-hmm. that were hiding from the immune system. So some people talk about these new drugs taking the brakes off the immune system mm-hmm. so that the immune system can find them and target them again.
Interesting. So. And I think that's really fascinating mm-hmm. about, I think ever since we've been able to map out the human genome and really see all these genetics and all these genes, I think treatment in so many diseases has really kind of exploded, because we're now able to locate where things are happening and kind of intervene there, you know?
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true. I think cancer therapy 10 years from now is going to be very different from what it is today, which is
yes.
really exciting.
And I think it's really different yeah. than it was 10 years even before
yes.
today.
Very true.
I remember yes. being in med school mm-hmm. and I remember our oncology teacher saying, if you've been affected or have a close relative that's been affected by cancer, stand up. And at that time, this was in 2000, let's say it was 2002. I think there was probably like the ratio was probably 1 in 10 people that stood up. And he said in 10 years, it's going to be 1 in 2 to 3 people. And
wow.
sure enough, it's exactly that,
yeah,
you know?
Very true.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so do you with that cell kind of evading the normal checkpoints, when we talk about causes of cancer, so when we talk about, you know, the things that people hear a lot, cigarette smoke, UV radiation, you know, certain toxins like asbestos for lung cancer. When you hear these things that are kind of, you know, quote unquote toxic to the body, Is your thought that it's kind of going into that, the DNA of that cell, and damaging that DNA, and that's kind of what starts the process? Or
I think in many cases, especially for cigarette smoking, we have lots and lots of data tying that to lung cancer, head and neck cancer, bladder cancers, as well as probably a lesser role in many other cancers we don't think of being the classic smoking-related cancers.
Right.
For example, one of the most aggressive lung cancers, called small cell lung cancer, mm-hmm. Almost exclusively associated with smoking. They found hundreds of mutations in the cells, and that is why it's not a situation like the Gleevec. There's not just a single target. There's hundreds of targets. And so for that kind of cancer, we're still using a very broad chemotherapy that works to try to stop the division of those cells at mm-hmm. the DNA level.
That makes sense. And the some of the things that are, when we hear about carcinogens, how do you think about a carcinogen and what that does to the body?
So in general, I think we think about carcinogens as anything that can damage the cells, mm-hmm. and usually at the level of DNA or the proteins that regulate the DNA,
right.
Because when it comes down to the basic machinery of the cell, there should be checkpoints so that DNA is not dividing over and over. And if there's substances that damage those proteins or DNA, then that's when the cell can again become cancerous,
yes.
and divide.
Yes, that makes sense. Have you seen in your practice, have you seen big changes happen with diagnosing cancer over the years? Or do you feel like the diagnosis has been pretty much the same?
So I think some of the biggest changes have just been in the less invasive ways. I was trying to
yes.
find the word I was looking
yes.
for. So for example, many, or I would say even most biopsies nowadays can be done with needle biopsy with the radiologist or the interventional radiologist, so that people are not having to have an open surgical biopsy.
Yes.
I think more advanced imaging with MRIs and PET CT scan. One of the newer things also that's not quite ready for prime time but very close is something called liquid biopsy, mm-hmm. where like say, for example, in a lung cancer, instead of having to put a needle into the tumor to get the diagnosis and get the cells, we might be able to get it from a blood test, and mm-hmm. there's lots and lots of research going on there as well. So I think the trend has been toward less invasive and safer ways to make the diagnosis, which is really,
yeah.
of course, an advantage.
And do you think, you know, sometimes when we get really good at diagnosing, the incidence of the disease goes up, right? So we say this disease just keeps growing. But oftentimes we're getting better and better at detecting it. So a lot of it would have gone undetected. Do you think both is happening with cancer? Do you think we're getting better at detecting it and the rates are just increasing as well?
I think in some cancers, uh-huh. that is definitely the case. And why, for example, with a disease like prostate cancer,
right.
men should really sit down and have that discussion with their primary care provider before screening about the pros and cons of early detection. But I think also we have to be very careful in terms of generalizing that to all cancers, because we know that there are cancers that there's very good data that we do improve outcomes and survival if we detect it early.
Right.
And
A good example of that? Yeah.
Oh, so I was just going to bring up lung cancer screening. So what is new in just the past 2 years is CT scan screening for lung cancer. And for some time, there was some debate over whether that should be done or not, because mm-hmm. if we were detecting it early but weren't making a difference in the outcomes.
Right.
But I think it's been shown now that we do make a difference in the outcome if it's detected earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And usually a chest X-ray is just not enough to detect it at an early enough stage.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So our diagnosis is we're getting better.
I think we are getting
better. And we're getting less invasive, which is great. We are talking with Dr. Jennifer Lysette about cancer care and cancer care here in Astoria. I'm Dr. Allie Evans, and this is Light on Health. We'll be right back.
זה שנסתכל על זה ונסתכל כן פעמיים היום זורם זורם כמו אתמול כמו שלשום וזה אותו כחול גדול אותו עוף בשמיים.
You're listening to Light on Health on Coast Community Radio. We are knee-deep in talk about the evolution of cancer care. And let's shift topics a little bit and talk about the new cancer center that's happening here, because I want to make sure we have time to talk about that. Will you tell us about this, the new Knight Cancer Center that's going to happen here?
Yes, I'd very much like to talk about that. And I know that a lot of people in the community have really put a lot of work into this happening. So a little bit of background is that we have had current cancer therapy infusion services in Astoria with CMH and the partnership with OHSU for coming up on 6 years. So there was a physician before me, Dr. Bob Raich, who was out here for about 3 years. And then I came and took over from him about 3.5 years ago. But we have not had radiation therapy services here locally. And that is because there's very special equipment needed. So you need more than just the physician and the specialist. You need equipment and facility and so forth. And so the new cancer center is going to expand our current infusion services, but also add full radiation therapy. So it's going to be a two-story facility, and the ground floor will be the radiation therapy, and then the second floor will be our medical therapy infusion services. So we're really excited about it.
Yeah, and so amazing for patients to not have to travel while they're undergoing radiation, kind of, because it's a daily regime often.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's sort of a paradox, because once people are on treatment with radiation, the treatment itself is perhaps a 15-minute treatment.
That's right.
But it does, in most cases, need to be done daily, Monday through Friday. And depending on the situation, it could be anywhere from 1 week to 6 weeks. And right. So currently our closest center to refer people to is the Peace Health Center in Longview. Mm-hmm. And we have an excellent partnership with them, and they offer a free shuttle van service, but it still is, you know, really taking 4 to 5 hours out of a person's
for
day.
For a 15-minute treatment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
And for many people who are on radiation therapy, for example, if they're getting their treatment locally, they may be able to like go into their treatment in the morning or at the end of the day and still go to work and still be with their family. And right now that's not possible because of the travel needed to get to the center that has the radiation.
Yeah, that's so exciting for us here. And it's slated to open by the fall, right, this year?
Correct, yeah. Correct. So yeah, my understanding is that around September, we will be seeing the medical patients, and then it will be a little more of a process to get the linear accelerator and all the process up and running for radiation, but probably October or November for radiation services
really
to start.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, very exciting.
And do you, when we're talking about radiation, this is a good point to, or a good time to bring up. So the treatment for cancer has really evolved, yet we still, some of the similarities to what it's always been. So, you know, for tumors, the treatments are usually, for cancer, the treatments are usually surgery, radiation, chemotherapy, or some combination there within. What's changed? That stayed the same, but what's changed kind of within all of that? I know that question could be a whole nother radio show, but
So in brief, I'll try to answer. So for many cancers, when they're detected at an early stage, and when we say that, we mean in general that the tumor is still confined to the organ where it started.
Or it hasn't metastasized.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, a little drink of water. So the mainstay of treatment is still surgery to remove that tumor, but what has evolved over time is the recognition that cancer is more of a systemic disease, and that
it's actually a process and not just a tumor.
Yes, it's a very good way to put it. Mm-hmm. And so over the years, with lots and lots of clinical trials and research, it's been shown that relapse can still happen even when it appears the tumor has been completely surgically removed, mm-hmm. and that the addition of what we call adjuvant treatments, which can include chemotherapy and for certain situations also radiation mm-hmm. therapy, sometimes one at a time, sometimes in combination, but can eliminate any cells that could be microscopic in the system, but by doing that can decrease the chance of relapse and increase the likelihood that someone will be cured.
Right.
And so some of what has changed in recent years is that for certain cancers, we're seeing more and more that doing the chemotherapy and radiation before surgery, what we now call neoadjuvant treatment, improves outcomes.
So changing the order that it's
changing
done.
Changing the order.
Interesting, because it was always sort of a just get the tumor out to start.
Right, right. And sometimes that's very difficult to get across to someone to explain that the reason we don't want them to have surgery right away, but we recommend doing those treatments first, is that we've seen that then over time the outcomes are actually better.
Mm-hmm. So. And I think there becomes... I know I've had this conversation with a lot of patients. There's that, you know, when you hear a cancer diagnosis, it's sort of jump into action. You know, it's right. really reflexively people want to do things very quickly. And you know, it's my feeling, and I'm curious of yours, that with the exception of a few really fast and aggressive cancers, that there is time for that patient to kind of decide what they want to do for treatment, and they don't have to rush into the OR like you're saying, and that process has been taking place for a long time.
Yeah, that's a really great point. Uh-huh. And I think you put it very well, that for most cancers, from the point of that initial cell we talked about
right.
to being a tumor 1 centimeter in size represents millions of cells, that process often might have taken place over months to years.
Right.
At the same time, like you mentioned, there are certain cancers that may be extremely aggressive.
Right. And like pancreatic cancer comes to mind for me. You know, that's a more quick and aggressive.
So pancreatic cancer in many ways is more aggressive because it is still one that we are not good at detecting at early stages.
Right.
So often by the time we detect it, people are at a stage 3 or stage 4.
Right.
So very true.
Right. Yeah. And it's interesting. A lot of the cancers, it seems we don't see the symptoms unless they're kind of affected. The tumor can get big enough to affect some of the critical organs where it would show up.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. And so then in terms of chemotherapy and drug therapies, we mentioned a little bit about this, but I'm curious what has changed. I know for our listeners, you might hear immunotherapy or targeted therapies. What's changed? Tell us a little bit about kind of this newer look at it, rather than just killing cancer cells. There's some other options.
Right. So in the past couple of years, one of the most rapid changes has been the FDA approval of several new medications that we're calling immune checkpoint inhibitors. And these are the ones we spoke about earlier that take the brakes off the immune system so the immune system can recognize essentially what we call targets on the cancer cell.
Which can be just a little protein that acts like a flag or
little... Exactly. Uh-huh. That's a great way to put it. Mm-hmm. And previously, the cancer cells had a mechanism to hide that flag from the immune system, but these drugs let the immune system recognize those cells again. Mm-hmm. And so it's a completely new paradigm, because instead of drugs that are going into rapidly dividing cells to affect the DNA and destroy the dividing cells, which is where a lot of the side effects of our older chemotherapies come from, because our dividing cells are our hair and the lining of our mouth and our GI tract, and so that's where a lot of those side effects come from. These cells are not, or excuse me, these drugs are not attacking the cancer cells directly, but they're stimulating the immune system to be able to destroy the cells. But that also comes with some risk, because the side effects that can be seen are if the immune system becomes too active and instead of just targeting the cancer cells, starts targeting normal tissues. So we can see syndromes that really mimic what we call autoimmune diseases. So
that makes sense. Yeah. And I would think maybe allergies as well, anything where the immune system's hyperactive.
Correct. So we've seen really a whole spectrum of toxicities with these drugs, anywhere from the lungs to the GI tract to the adrenal system, to the nervous system. Correct.
Well, it is exciting, and it is exciting where the future is going with cancer care, and it's really exciting what's happening here with it as well.
It is, and I'm just really excited to be a part of it. And I think the partnership between CMH and OHSU has been a really great thing for this community. And I just feel really privileged to be out here and be a part of that.
Do you, in closing, is there anything kind of, you know, that's that leave us with something that feels the kind of the most rewarding to you in the work that you do day to day?
Oh, boy. Gosh. So
hopefully it feels rewarding, but I know it does.
It does. I mean, this community has been so welcoming. And one of the I mean, there are many things I think I could say, but one of the things that comes into mind is I recall a man I met when I had first come out here who came to see me with lung cancer and told me that if we weren't out here, that he would have just done nothing, that there, he would not have gone to Portland or Longview or anywhere else. And that's something I that has really just stuck with me, to realize how much we were able to help him just by being out here.
That's right. So, and I think it's, you know, it goes to anyone who's providing, you know, the jobs that we all do day to day. It's like that difference we all make that we don't realize, you know, whether we're a physician, whether we're helping someone at the grocery store, whether we're, you know, fixing cars, that idea that like we make an impact each day and we don't know what it would be if we weren't here, right?
Very true.
Yeah.
That's a great way to put it.
And for anyone wanting to get in contact with you, you are at Columbia Memorial Hospital, correct?
Correct.
Is that the best way to contact you?
Yeah. So the CMH OHSU Infusion Center, Cancer Care Center, right now we're located on the first floor of the Park Building, right across from Columbia Memorial Hospital. And so we're on the CMH website, and also on the OHSU Night Cancer website. There's a link there as well.
Great. Yeah. Well, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
I feel like we could do six more shows. Thank you to Dr. Jennifer Lysette, and a very special thank you to our engineer, Kate Brister. You have been listening to Light on Health, and it is my hope that we've enlightened and empowered you to take one tiny step forward towards your own radiant health. See you next month. Bye-bye.